Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. Okay, our final speaker tonight is Sharon from Los Angeles.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you guys for allowing me to step on the road to recovery with all of you today. It's really, you're my people. Ugh, I'm Sharon, I'm an alcoholic. And
hi, Sharon.
Thank you for the invite, Brother Wayne. We both have the same sponsor, so it's good to have that nice connection. Thank you, John, Jonathan, and Mark. Oh, my gosh. I was laughing because I think it was Jonathan said he wasn't just having a bad patch. And I was like, oh, my goodness. If you're new, you're probably thinking, yeah, it wasn't just a bad patch. There's terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair following me along this whatever I'm on path. And that's what I had coming to you. And my sobriety date is August 20th, 1975. And I had no idea that I would stay here that long because I'm a runner. I'm a runner. And I'm doing fine during this whole COVID thing because of the connection with all of us. I know that sitting here with me today is this amazing power that gives me joy and fills my heart and allows me to let it overflow and want to help whoever needs it. And I know that many of you are sitting there with your power. And if we're sober today, the age of miracles is still with us. And I totally believe that. You know, I grew up in Iowa and I was an alien too. I felt that. I looked for the mothership. I have a lovely family, but I found the obsession of alcohol. And it allowed me to not seek Gandhi's teachings anymore. It allowed me to not try to go be, you know, the perfect little Catholic girl and help every mission that there was to go be a missionary. Something changed when I was 12 years old. And it allowed me to feel the omnipotence and the power and the connectivity that it didn't do for my best friend sitting next to me. And I was going to chase that for many years. And I had no idea that my seeking was over because I found everything I needed in a bottle of whiskey and a bottle of tequila. I found all of the power I was looking for there. So why go to India if you can just drink some of that stuff? So that was where I was at. And, you know, it was the 60s and it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks, but that's another whole thing going on. But I always had my booze. Nobody took it away from me. I was able to get it when I was underage. I was able to water years down. I was able to steal it. I was able to get what I needed. I was able to follow you to your party and find out where you hid it in the woods. And I was able to go back and get it and have my party. And that was the way it was. And I had a lot of promise. I had art talent. After 2 years of rebelling and having my heart broken by my fiance and a lot of those things, I started running. And my dad and I had some good talks. He tried to help me. Because I'm the only one. I'm the only one out of four that is not complying. I'm the only one out of four that is wants to get your goat. I'm the one that likes you to blow up and start yelling because I can point at you. I can be a victim too. I got that, John. Point at you and say, look at you, you hypocrite. You know, I did that to the priests. I got them really riled up in confession one time. One of them came out yelling at me. So that was my one-finger peace sign to the Catholic Church that took me a long time in sobriety to get back to and to make some amends because I had a lot of amends when I came here. And I'm a runner, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time running. I'm going to spend a few more minutes. I ran to New York City, worked for an ad agency. It was the summer of love. We had so much fun. I wore myself out. I asked my dad if I could go back to art school. He said, one more chance. I'm not paying for the party. So I went back to art school, and an interesting thing happened. I couldn't paint. It was gone. And I don't know if I would have been sitting in a bar somewhere in New York City and the bartender would have said, hey, kid, you're going to go down this road with King Alcohol. It's time to slide across. You got to pay now. You got to pay with your art talent. I would have said, take it. Who cares? And I couldn't paint anymore. And I was very depressed. And a lot was going on. And I packed my bags again. And my dad and I couldn't sit at the same breakfast table. We couldn't look eye to eye to each other. We couldn't ride in the same car to Thanksgiving to Grandma's house. It was so much pain between me and dad, never physical, but emotional pain that my mother said at times when I would go home for a respite, please stay out of your father's way because you break his heart. It's like, ugh. So I went to Colorado to be a cowgirl. I never got on a horse. I was too drunk. I ended up meeting Bob Dylan and coming to California for the first time. And, you know, people say, well, was it Bob Dylan? I didn't ask for his driver's license. So, you know, whatever. I ended up at a commune where I got kicked out for drinking their bong wine. I'm a drinker. I'm a drinker. I don't fit in with people living on the edge. I go back home. I meet a guy that said, let me take care of you. And I went to northern Wisconsin to an organic community. There were eight people, eight farms. We all had something organic to do to make this community work. And they didn't want me drinking. They just said, just smoke this stuff. What's wrong with you? And it's like, you guys are boring. And I was the drinker in all those eight farms. So when they went off to do primal therapy, they left me alone with my Maui Waui seed growing in the forest. And, you know, winter was coming again and I'm alone and it's damn cold up there. And I went to turn this crop into money and I forgot the crop. So I joined the carnival. And so, you know, eventually I got, the carnival people didn't want me anymore. It's like, I was too much for them because I wouldn't let these little boys win their teddy bears because I was drinking tequila and I'm not giving up my teddy bears tonight. So fights would start and I would have I always had mace in my boot because I hitchhiked. So I had mace in my boot and I would mace people and then we would get closed down and it was a big mess. So the owner of the show, once we got to Bogalusa, Louisiana, yes, look it up on the map. It exists. That's where the finest, you know, authority figures came in and came into my motel room one morning early and found enough to take me to jail, sales and possession, even though I was bartering and they wouldn't believe me, but who cares? And the carnival said, bye-bye, get rid of that little Wisconsin girl. She's trouble. So I didn't fit in anywhere and it didn't matter anymore. And along the way, I had to slide across the bar my dignity. You know, that was something, I don't know, say it when you're drunk. Hey, take my dignity. You know, it's like, who cares about dignity? I want my booze. And when they finally let me out, I found the French Quarter of New Orleans. And that's where the last 3 years drinking off and on, 24/7, darkness, craziness, blackouts. You know, these are the people I hung out with. I broke a little bone in my foot once, walking in the French Quarter drunk, trying to get to my bar after falling off the grand piano, trying to dance for a living. That was short-lived. And I go into the bar because, you know, I love bar drinking. There's always an astronaut, a politician, a doctor, a lawyer. We were always calling the president. We were always like, let's call the president. You know, it was always a lot of excitement in the bar. And they looked at my foot and everybody talked about it. The lawyer wanted to sue New Orleans, right? You know, everybody. But they took some duct tape because every good bartender has duct tape. And we taped that little bone on top of my foot down. And I had to wear that shoe because they taped it around my platform shoe for 3 weeks. And they did a great job. I don't even see it. I don't feel it when it rains. And, you know, it's like everything great happened in a bar. I love the fantasy. Now, I don't call home anymore because my mother cries because I joined the carnival. I don't call home anymore because my dad passes the phone to my mom. It's April of 1975. It's April. And I'm on my way to Hawaii because I'm leaving the French Quarter because even my alcoholic friends didn't want to drink with me anymore. I was too much of a downer. I didn't know how I was going to be. And I the only time I was ever without alcohol was in that jail, And I had DTs in that jail and it was crazy. So I wasn't going to be without alcohol ever again. And I'm on my way to Hawaii and I end up in Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood. It's a, you know, it's a crazy bar. Now I think it's, I don't know, it's a something to do with tourism, but it was all the seedy drinkers. And there was a girl in there really drunk and she had this book under her arm and it was said Alcoholics Anonymous. And the bartender called her a taxi because he wouldn't let her drive drunk to her A&A meeting. And we took our drinks and we said, good for you, Chris, go to A&A. She fell into the taxi. That was April of 75. In July of 75, I went out with some bike. I liked Harleys. I liked to ride. I mean, I didn't drive. I rode. I just liked the freedom of it all and the adrenaline of it all. And I didn't really have boyfriends anymore because I couldn't feel anything. I was shutting down as a human being. And we went somewhere and they left me. And then I was in a car with my girlfriend and she left me in a car with strangers. And I ended up being victimized that night. And I understand what John said. I mean, there I was laying on a gurney in Palm Springs Hospital. My jaw was literally broken off the side of my face. I had, you know, a lot of concussion, a lot of things. They really knocked me around a lot and rolled me off the side of the road where I had a voice. And the voice said, get up, I want to live, as I laid on the sand. And I guess I paid attention. That was the beginning of some sort of a experience, awakening of my soul saying, there's another way, but I had no idea. Nobody in my family was alcoholic. I knew I had bad drinking. I didn't care. I stopped caring. I built my life around alcohol. And I was in the hospital and I had to write my name. I had no idea. And it said victim in front of my name. And if I could have smiled at that moment, I would have smiled. Yes, I was shooting for victim. 2 weeks in the hospital, somebody felt sorry for me, came and got me. And I lived above a liquor store in West Los Angeles. I have no money. I have nowhere to go. He's buying me cheap wine. I'm sticking a straw in that cheap wine. I was wired up inside and outside for 3 months. And I would stick the straw through the place where the tooth had been kicked out and suck on my alcohol. Cheap wine. And it did nothing for me. I just sat there depressed, dejected, no friendly direction, and just sucked on this wine all day. I don't even know how long I was there. Maybe 5-6 days. And he came and he said, you know what? You got to leave. You're depressing me. And he was letting me sleep on his couch. I had to go back to court. They caught these guys. It was a mess. And I was bone tired and I had nowhere to go. So I called my mom. And my mom didn't know for 2 nights when I was in that hospital where I was, if I was going to be okay. My mom didn't sleep for 2 nights. My mom didn't sleep for many nights, not knowing where her daughter was. Just that my mom slept. From the moment I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I am overpaid, as Normalpy used to say. I am overpaid that my mother got to sleep at night. And if you're new and you're coming in here, 10 people's lives are better. 10 people's lives are better the moment you come sit with us, because they know. They know where you are. They know that there is hope here and that they're praying and hoping and wondering if things are going to happen. And it took me a long time to realize that the moment I walked in with you, this life is not about me, that this life has been given to me so that I can give it to others. So that one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, the passion of what has been given to us, that's, we save a life. My life has been saved to save a life. And I totally believe that with my whole heart. So I looked at a phone number on August 20th when my mother said to me, Sharon, I can't help you go to the Salvation Army. What? Mother, always $20, you'd have another speaker. Norm Alpe used to talk about seconds and inches that we get to be here. Each one of us, seconds and inches. And at that moment it was, and I looked down and there was a phone number there. He was dating the girl in the bar with the big book that I had met last April. It was like the next breadcrumb to pick up. And I picked it up and I called. And she knew she couldn't help me because she was drinking that day. She died at 31 of alcoholism, a wet brain. And what happened was I called a stranger. She gave me a number and all of a sudden she knew where I was. She said she knew the liquor store I was living above. I can't talk really. 3 months in AA, the first 3 months, you guys, I had to listen. Open my mouth. It was a blessing in disguise. All of you talked to me incessantly and I got a lot of information. But I get up, these girls pick me up. I don't know. I just need a place to stay. I've got my backpack with all my worldly possessions, my book, Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass, because that's where I was going until I discovered Be Here Now meant do what you want when you want to do it. And my selfish, self-centered, alcoholic darkness, that's what I did. That's what I thought it meant at the end of all of my drinking. And that's what I got in the car. And they talked to me consistently and excessively. And I thought, wow, they talk a lot about themselves. And I came to my first meeting, but I didn't know. It was a church. I'm thinking, okay, it's a church. We got to do this now, but I need a place to stay. I'll play the game for a little bit, and then I'm gone. And the man standing behind the podium said, he hooked me with this. He said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. And I went, oh, I'm with spaceship people. All right, I can do this. And that hooked me. That hooked me. That got my attention. That threw some kindling on the ember of life that came in here. And of course, after the meeting, not knowing where I was, this man comes up with this big book. And it's like, oh, that's where I am. But he was nice and he got my name out of me. And so he wrote it in pencil. He wrote my sobriety date, 8/20/75, and he wrote where I was. And that's still in pencil in my second edition big book. And it isn't pencil. Every single day is a new day. And all it would have taken was a little eraser of hope. You just erase the hope. One drink, erase it all. Erase, erase. Today, I live my life with passion and with love and with kindness and with the power that's here to have growth. I'm a seeker. I'll always be a seeker. It's just where I am, feet firmly planted, head in the clouds with him. But feet firmly planted, that's where our work is to be done. You are my God with skin on. I need to connect with skin. I need to connect with God with skin on. And I am actually getting it with all of this. I didn't understand it, but it's actually coming to me because I know that we're all in this together. I got a sponsor because they wouldn't leave me alone. And then they moved me from a floor to a couch. I got to sponsor my life that better. And it was that simple for me. And I had to start the steps and, you know, I just, it was okay. I could see the powerlessness. I got that. And my life unmanageability, I didn't get that for a while, but I certainly got that as we kept going through the steps. My first third step with my sponsor was crazy because she hugged me and wouldn't stop hugging me. And I just thought, I'm going to have to hit her. Don't touch me. She's shorter than me. She's right all over me. And I was just thinking, if I hit her, everybody will know and they'll kick me out. And I need to stay here right now. And what my head said was, oh my God, I think I'm gay. I'm in love with my sponsor. Because that's the way my brain works. It's pretty jumbled. So she said, let's don't make any major decisions in our first year. And she was good. I went home. I did my amends. I did the fourth step. I too had a hard time with four. I worked hard on it. Hard on it. Hardest thing I had done to that point in my whole life. And when I did my fifth with my sponsor, I felt like I connected. I connected with something bigger than me. I've had some sacred moments in my first year. I've had sacred moments all through my life where I can feel the power. I can feel the love. I can feel that this is worth it, that this is what my experience is an example. I get that. And I went home after that, and my mom and I were fine, and my dad and I were like, you know, nope. There's no eye contact. Nope. And I had written what I needed to say to my dad and I had memorized it. And we're going back to the airport, back to LA. And I said, Dad, I need a few minutes with you. And he said, okay. We leaned against the car. It was September of, I was 1 year sober. And we leaned against the warm car and we didn't look at each other. And we looked at our feet. And I said what I had to say to my dad. And he said, I just always wanted you to be happy. And so my sponsor said, it's a good start. So, you know, somewhere in the book it said, remember at the beginning, we agreed that we would do anything for victory over alcohol. I was like, I did. I agreed. I love this book. I find things all the time in it that just, okay, I am still very teachable. Thank you, God. So my 2 years, my dad came and walked me down the aisle in California, Boy Meets Girl on AA campus, went to a meeting. You took him to the literature table. He bought the big book. He's a reader. He has books stacked by his chair. At 5 years of sobriety, I got a sponsor that said, you got a better job. Call your dad and make financial amends to him. What? We're not talking about. But you know how they are. They go to sponsor school. So, okay, you got to say yes. I called my dad thinking he'll have to work this out. He said it's this much. He had read in the big book where it said most alcoholics owe money, and he ran a calculator tape, and he put it in the big book. And after my dad was gone, my mother told me this. She said it was circled in red on page 78 of the big book. And I was like, I called my sponsor. It's too high. It's too fast. She said, I don't care. I don't care. What are the payment terms? Agree to those. I agreed. She said, then don't be late with that check because you may be the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous your father ever sees. So Bill and Bob are watching. Oh, my God. The founders are watching. I got to be on time. Oh, my God. They go to sponsor school. I swear to God, they do. So what happened was my dad actually got a check and a note because my sponsor said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad, whatever that meant? See, you know, my friend Sandy said, this is the treasure map. You have your experience with the book, and then you get the treasure, which is having had a spiritual awakening. And then we get to be like the prospector. We mine it the rest of our lives and give every piece away. So I need a guide to go through this with this treasure map. And they've been great for me because they have higher vision on the shoulders of giants. They've sat me there and they've said, look down the road. Are you willing to grow through this with your dad? Okay, whatever that means. Put a note about your life. Tell him about your life, Sharon. Okay. And I did a little note and a letter and a letter. And 4 years and 10 months later, best I can figure, my dad called me after Christmas and said, it was on Boxing Day. You guys have that. Merry Christmas, daughter. I don't want your money anymore. But don't stop sending me your notes. And it was like the little elves hung around to clip those defiant little chips on my shoulder to fall on the floor. And at one point, somewhere in those 4 years and 10 months, my dad and I were when I was back in Iowa, we're doing errands together all day in a car. And what happened was, he said, Sharon, do you want a root beer? We're driving by the root beer stand. It was hot. It was Iowa. And I said, yeah. So we went and get our root beer, and we sat at a picnic table in the shade. That's where he wanted to sit. And if you would have looked over and sitting in your car having a root beer, he said, it's a father-daughter having a nice talk. Who knew redemption, forgiveness? Who knew all of that was going to happen? Who knew that there was going to be innocence that came back? If you would have looked underneath the picnic table, I was a six-year-old girl swinging my feet, sitting there talking to my daddy. No idea. Those sponsors have vision. And all those giants that have been on their shoulders, oh my goodness, many of them are gone. Many are gone. But they've taught us well. We're being shoved to the front row, those of us that are here a while. And we have to shoulder this responsibility. And one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic with the big book, with the 12 and 12, with the steps, with the love, with giving this away, with our awakening. We have to keep the doors open. We have to stand by the door, sit in the front row, keep your eyes and ears and heart open. Have that intuitive thought every day. Take kindness to the world. I don't get to have judgmental compassion. It just doesn't work that way. I have a lot of love in my heart, but my God is everlasting love. I'll never get there. I'm like Bill. I'm never going to get to that perfection. But I do love. But everlasting love is that. They say if you're on the road to enlightenment and you meet the Buddha, kill him. It's like, what? Kill the Buddha? That means you've met your God. You understand your God. Keep moving. Keep moving. I love that. I aspire to that. I am so... My husband got a new wife, and she was a newcomer in the road, and it was painful. My sponsor got off the plane with 21 days. I had a new baby. I was devastated. And I asked Clancy to sponsor me because I needed a sponsor louder than my head. And as I was going through all of that, and there was nobody got custody of the meeting. So I have to watch this. I am mad. I'm betrayed. I'm the victim again. And one night, Clancy sees me on my way with two hot cups of coffee because I heard you can't be just spiritual, hot coffee poured all over you. I'm on my way to them. And he took the coffee out of my hands and he grabbed one shoulder and he grabbed the other shoulder and he's sharing, you'll walk through this with dignity and grace. And if he would have stopped there, I'd said, I want revenge. I don't care about dignity and grace. I'm done. I'm humiliated. But he said, so you can be an example to others. I heard him. And I did another inventory with him, looking at my wrongs in the marriage. That was so hard for me. But I left them alone. And when he left her, she told me that she knew she could do it because she had watched me. So out of that whole room, all the people I knew in life, everybody gets my example but her. And that's the one who needed it. And we are best friends, and she gives me a cake every year. We do holidays together. She's got a boy. My son has a half-brother, and we're a family. And 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days after that was over, I got to meet my man, Casey. We were together 24 years. In fact, he sponsored John Wetton for a while, who's no longer, who's at the big meeting in the sky, too. And John came over to our house a lot when he was in town, and I got to go help him buy a little denim jacket for his little girl. And I think of all the heroes I've known in life. And I'm here because I have a purpose, page 77. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves, to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Wow. That's my real purpose. Okay. So life has been, my husband and I were together 24 years. He got malignant melanoma, and he was told 7 months, and we got 2 years and 2 months out of it. And we did a lot of AA. We went to Sweden and Australia and Ireland and North Dakota and Virginia. We just said yes to AA, and he kept showing up no matter how he felt. And I'm going to end with this because I got to tell you, my mother slept at night, 95 years old. I got to hold her. My husband, I held him on his last day. It'll be 9 years, June 3rd. And I have taken his ashes all over the world. I've taken him places we've been. I've taken him places where we wanted to go. All over the world. And the love story continues for me. Broken, open hearts heal bigger. So if your heart is breaking, it's going to heal bigger. There's going to be more experience, more love, more example, more of God able to just reach out and welcome somebody with hope. I wake up every morning and my dog goes, I say, God, 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 because I don't want to listen to my mind because it does center there. And this dog, Heart Jack Russell, thinks, ah, she's God. You know, she just loves it. I open my door at night when I come in. You're home, you're home, you're home. And that's the way my God is with me. But this is the story I'm going to end with, because my husband was sitting at the table one day, and I was sitting with him having our morning coffee reading, and it was blowing the Santa Ana winds outside as they do in California, and they're pretty wicked. And he said, "Wow, look at today. It's windy outside. Do you see the wind?" I said, "Yeah, look at it, what it's doing outside. It's just, that tree is knocking on the house. I hope it's going to be okay." And he was quiet for a minute, and then he said, "No, Sharon, do you see the wind?" And I thought, okay, this is a sacred moment. And I think I'm going to be quiet and try to figure out what this is. This is my husband trying to tell me something. And I got it. With my eyes, I don't see the wind. He said, "You see the effects of the wind, right?" I said, "Yeah, I see the effects." And he was very, very quiet for a minute. And he said, "You know, I don't see God in all of this. I don't see God in this cancer and the treatment. And I walk in there and somebody I loved is gone. Somebody that was in treatment with me will never come back. And that it's hard, but I do what I can do every single day, and I don't see God in it. But every single day, my love, Sharon, I walk out into the world, and I look for the effects of God." And that's why he gave me my marching orders. Thank you for walking with me on the road of recovery today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Love you.